This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Later this hour, WGCU's John Davis will chat with two researchers from the University of Central Florida about this year's abundant green sea turtle nesting season and their work studying the turtle's genetics. But first, when Congress passed the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Act 19 years ago, it called for construction of an enormous Caloosahatchee River, or C-43, West Basin Storage Reservoir to help store and manage basin runoff in order to help maintain appropriate salinity levels in the estuary during dry season. Well, that massive reservoir, it's about the same size as the city of Naples, is now under construction and could be complete within the next few years, although that timeline is still not entirely fixed. But as was driven home during last year's massive blue-green algae bloom that originated in Lake Okeechobee, it's clear there needs to be a way to ensure the water stored in the C-43 reservoir is clean when it's released back into the river. On today's show, we're going to get an update on the South Florida Water Management District's construction progress and what plans are in place when it comes to water quality. And we're going to get a preview of this Wednesday's C-43 Reservoir Water Quality Summit being hosted by the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership, or CHNEP, which until this weekend was known as the Charlotte Harbor National Estuary Program. I'm joined in studio by that organization's Executive Director, Jennifer Hecker. Jennifer, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us.
And I'm joined on the phone by Phil Flood. He's Regional Representative for the South Florida Water Management District. Phil, thanks for your time today. Phil, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hi, thanks for your time. We appreciate you being with us.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
And also on the line, we're joined by Dr. Bob Knight. He's Principal Scientist at Wetland Solutions in Gainesville. They're an environmental consulting company that focuses on natural and constructed treatment wetlands. Dr. Knight, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you, Mike, for having me on.
And as always, we do invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Jennifer, real quick, tell us about the name change.
A couple of years ago, before I started with the CHNEP, we had a public retreat, and one of the first things that came out of that, the highest priority, was that the public wanted us to expand to cover the freshwater portion of the Caloosahatchee watershed, just as we do for the Peace, the Myakka, and other rivers and estuaries that we protect. So we went ahead and followed up on that, and we are simultaneously to our name change, including Glades and Hendry counties and the freshwater Caloosahatchee Basin. The name is to reflect the nature of our program, which is now 10 counties and 10 plus cities that are mostly inland but also coastal, and the fact that those two entities are really coming together to protect these watersheds holistically. We have six different estuaries that we work to protect, from Donna and Roberts Bay in Sarasota County all the way down to Estero Bay in Lee County. So reaching inland and up to the beginning of where the water flows for those estuaries is absolutely critical to their protection.
Cool. So just much bigger scope, basically.
Yes.
So how did the idea for this summit come about?
This was an idea that, I mean, has been ruminating for a while. I think many people in the community realize that this is an important issue. It was actually contemplated when SERP, the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan, was originally drafted, that there would be some water quality component. And I know that the district already has projects underway, which I'm sure we'll hear about. The community wants to learn about those and also talk about other opportunities for water quality treatment, because we want to make sure that the water in the reservoir is sufficiently cleansed so that it can be released back to the river in the dry season when the river needs additional flow. That's one of the things with the reservoir that's interesting, is it's really to address when we have too little flow during that dry season, and to help to bring salinity levels back into more natural ranges. So having the water cleansed as well as being able to be pulsed out at the right time will help to improve conditions in the river and estuary.
Is there still room at the summit on Wednesday?
We are almost sold out as far as in-person attendance, but we do have a great web streaming capability to have people participate via webinar, and they can even submit questions and comments. So we're encouraging people to go on our website and sign up for the webinar, and then you will be able to virtually participate.
Can you give us an idea of the scope of what will be done during the day-long summit?
So we're going to go through several different sessions. We're going to have a discussion about a working group that has formed to carry this conversation forward. The South Florida Water Management District and DEP are taking the helm, so I'll leave it to Phil to really fill in about that. But we're going to start with that to make people aware that this is just the beginning of what will be an ongoing effort to explore this. And then we also have the Dr. Knight talking about the historical studies that have been done, because this isn't a new issue. There's been a lot of work done, and we want to make sure everyone's aware of that. Also, we're going to go into water quality conditions and concerns with regards to the Coosatchee River and estuary, bringing in top scientists and policy experts. And then we're going to go into water quality treatment projects that are already underway, so people understand what is already being done. And then finally, with opportunities, looking at some innovative strategies and technologies that can help improve water quality and seeing if they might be applicable. And then finally, at the very end of the day, just gathering the public's input, which we're hoping will be parlayed into a public process that will then continue to further explore these opportunities.
All right. Phil Flood, let's turn to you now. You're a representative from the South Florida Water Management District. For starters, can you just give us an update on what's the construction progress looking like right now for the C-43?
Well, we're moving along pretty quickly, actually. When you think about this project, was initially conceived back in two decades ago. I mean, the land was originally acquired in 2000, and it was ready to go in 2008, waiting on the federal government. But in 2015, then Governor Scott directed us to move forward and let's just build this thing without the federal government instead of waiting on them. So since that time, we've awarded four construction contracts. The first one was kind of a preliminary clearing out the site, getting rid of all of the existing structures that were on the property. It was a large 10,500-acre orange grove, and so we removed all the pump stations and the piping and culverts and that such, and then prepared it did some preparatory work out there for the construction. We built a small pump station, which is going to move water around the perimeter canal, and we awarded a $56 million contract here about a year ago for the large pump station, which will pull the water in from out of the Caloosahatchee. And then just last month, our governing board awarded the largest construction contract we've ever awarded, $524 million, half a billion dollars, to build the dam, the perimeter structure around it, as well as all the individual water control structures out there. We gave the notice to proceed on that, I believe, today. And so they'll be able to get out there and get started. Once their crews arrive and are fully up and operational, they'll have four independent groups working on different areas of the property. They'll have about 150 to 200 heavy pieces of heavy equipment out there on site, and that'll be going gangbusters until the end of 2023 is when we're looking at having it all completed, substantially completed, and we can start looking at running the pumps and filling it up. So it's moving along. It's big changes from when we first got started out there, but still, given the magnitude of the project, you got to remember this is 18 square miles. The reservoir is 6 miles across east and west and 3 miles north and south. So given the magnitude of this thing, it takes a while to design and build a project of this size. So it's coming along, though.
Is it fully funded all the way to completion, or will there need to be more allocations made, you know, from the state and or possibly the federal government, although that seems unlikely going forward?
Well, the agreement we have with the federal government is the state is going to pay 100% of this one. The district and the state are going to build this, and then we will get credit on another Everglades restoration project through the federal government. But we will continue to rely upon the legislature to provide funding to keep the project moving along. This was a historic year for funding for the environment from our Florida legislature and Everglades restoration in particular. So we got over $253 million specifically for Everglades restoration. And so the C-43 reservoir will probably take up probably about half of that this coming year. So we will be relying on, we will be back in Tallahassee, and that's part of my role with the district is I'm our legislative liaison, so I'll be up there. Working the halls and making sure that we get the continued funding to finish this project as well as the other projects that are underway throughout the district.
Maybe impossible to answer at this point, but do you feel like the momentum that was started during this session and since Governor DeSantis took over might be continuing?
Well, I'd certainly like to hope so.
Well, all right. Let's turn to water quality then. What is currently planned in terms of water quality elements, along with the C-43 or built into it, or however that's supposed to be characterized?
Well, we are kicking off a feasibility study. We hope to award a contract here this month and kick off. It'll be about an 18-month feasibility study. where we're going to be evaluating various mechanisms, trying to identify the most cost-effective and technologically feasible project out there to clean the water that will be released out of the Caloosahatchee Reservoir. So we're going to be looking at a variety of scenarios there, but we're going to be looking at treating the water before it goes in the reservoir, possibly treating it while it's in the reservoir, or treating it once it leaves the reservoir before it gets into the river, or maybe some combination of that. We'll be looking at conventional as well as innovative treatment methods, and we're going to be considering just about everything from biological to chemical to physical water quality treatment technologies, all trying to find that most cost-effective and technologically feasible project that can be used in conjunction with the reservoir so that we'll have some clean water coming out of the reservoir going into the Caloosahatchee River.
Are there any other reservoirs this big in the state that have a water quality element like stormwater treatment areas or something like that that they're associated with?
Not constructed. The EAA Reservoir down south of Lake Okeechobee is of similar size. It has the same footprint, 10,500 acres. It's a little bit holds more water than this one, but that one is, we're just now beginning the design work on that one as opposed to this one that's under construction. So this will be the largest constructed in the state.
If you're just joining the show today, we're learning about the massive C-43 reservoir being constructed in Hendry County near Alva, just south of the Caloosahatchee River. There's going to be a water quality summit exploring ways to keep water in it clean once it's completed this Wednesday in Fort Myers. Our guests are Jennifer Hecker. She's executive director of the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership. Phil Flood, he's regional representative for the South Florida Water Management District. That's who we were just talking to. And Dr. Bob Knight, he's principal scientist at the environmental consulting firm Wetland Solutions in Gainesville. To ask a question or make a comment, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Bob Knight, let's bring you into the conversation now. Just real quick, tell us about your background and what you'll be focusing on this Wednesday during the summit.
I'm an environmental scientist. Worked for 17 years with CH2M Hill, a large environmental engineering company in Gainesville, Florida. During that time, I worked on a number of South Florida projects related to the Everglades STAs, the stormwater treatment areas. That my whole career has been focused on design and use of wetlands for water quality enhancement worldwide. In 1996, I started a company, Wetland Solutions. Actually, 2000, we were incorporated, and that company has been in existence since 2000 and specializes in treatment wetland projects. I was involved in a preliminary way in 1994 with the first stormwater treatment area project, the ENR. I was then involved through my time with CH2M Hill and through Wetland Solutions with the design and implementation of a number of the stormwater treatment areas, including the work on the periphyton stormwater treatment areas, which the biggest stormwater treatment area is number 3-4, that includes a very large periphyton treatment component in it. Essentially wrote the book on the technology years ago, and since then, Wetland Solutions has been involved in a number of projects with the district related to the C-43. The first of those was basically a literature review and assessment of current conditions in 2005, a white paper on the Caloosahatchee River and estuary, outlining the history up to that time, and then a team, Stanley Consultants and Wetland Solutions, conducted preliminary research at the reservoir test cells, starting in 2006. The district built two test cells on the reservoir property that was just described, and operated those for a year to examine what the water quality implications would be of that. I worked on that, and we found out some interesting things. We found out that, in general, the reservoir may actually reduce nutrient levels to a very beneficial aspect, but at the same time, because of the open water conditions in a reservoir, there might be an increase in total suspended solids, which is another issue downstream. Basically, algae would grow in the reservoir. So from that, we pretty much concluded that it might be necessary to go to additional treatment after the reservoir. The district then funded a project back again with C.H. Twom Hill to look at treatment technologies. All the treatment technologies were examined by C.H. Twom Hill, and they pretty much focused in on wetlands as the most cost-effective natural treatment technology. And then the district decided to hire an expert panel to review that work, and I headed up that expert panel. We decided to take a slightly different course from C.H. Twom Hill, the panel members, and that led to basically design of a project on the Boma property purchased jointly by the district in Lee County to examine how you would design a natural treatment system, a wetland system, if you will, for full-scale polishing of the water coming out of the C-43 reservoir. And that project is just finishing up next month, and it'll be discussed at the workshop on Wednesday.
So the idea would be to have a large stormwater treatment area, which is like a man-made wetland, basically, that you could push the water through slowly before it makes it back into the river, and that would remove nutrients?
Yeah, you could either treat the water before it gets to the reservoir or after it gets to the reservoir, but it's very likely that some water quality treatment will be required. Certainly, source controls in Lake Okeechobee and change in the regulation schedule in Lake Okeechobee would be beneficial to the Caloosahatchee. So those are things that could be done upstream, but there's not much point of treating the water upstream. There's a very large amount of the nutrients that come into the Caloosahatchee come in the basin itself, and either those need to be reduced through source control or the reservoir and associated treatment system will be needed to really reduce the algal issues downstream and around Fort Myers.
So I'm an amateur at this, so bear with me. But, you know, if you're putting water into the reservoir as it's coming down the river, it goes in pretty fast, I would think. And then when you release it, the need would be to release it fairly quickly. So how do you solve that challenge when it comes to what seems like it would take time to do the cleaning in the STAs? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, the purpose of the reservoir is to reduce the size of the wet season loads, and that during the wet season, very large volumes of water are discharged based on the Lake Okeechobee operation schedule. And that the purpose of the reservoir is to capture some of that excess water, hold it until the dry season, and then discharge it more gradually and with additional treatment if needed. The actual amount of volume this gigantic reservoir about to hold is not very great compared to those releases, so it will not be a complete fix for the fact that there's regulatory releases. Also, the reservoir will have to be empty or very low levels to capture that water. So the reservoir operations are going to be tricky, and the reducing the releases themselves from Lake Okeechobee would be very beneficial, obviously, in concert with the reservoir.
Mike, I just want to point out we'll be looking at other options than just a stormwater treatment area.
I was just about to ask you, Phil, so I'm glad you jumped in.
And so that's the whole point of the feasibility study is to find out what is the appropriate methodology for cleaning that water. So it might incorporate some other innovative technologies. We've looked at various alternatives but haven't really come up with that silver bullet that works yet. So part of the work that will be done here through the feasibility will be evaluating the work that Dr. Knight has done, and others, as well as some other technologies out there, and find that best one. We're planning on kicking this feasibility study off here within the next month, and we'll have our very first public engagement workshop this fall. And so I would encourage listeners to keep an eye out and or sign up to get a notification. We're going to have probably about four or five public workshops to present the feasibility study from the very inception, get input from the community, and then provide the information that that the scientists have come up with and some of the evaluation to get more feedback from them. So
Dr. Knight just mentioned the size of the reservoir in relation to the releases from the Lake Okeechobee. Is it possible to characterize, how quickly you would fill up that reservoir at sort of peak release time? I mean, is that like a day's worth of water? Is that an hour's worth of water? Is that a month's worth of water?
that's really hard to say, because the Corps does, they vary, how much water they release at different times of the year and what the conditions are and everything. This reservoir, I got to point out, is not specifically to capture lake.
Right, right.
It's to capture primarily basin runoff when we have too much rainfall in the summertime because we've over-drained our watershed, so it just overwhelms our estuary with too much fresh water in the rainy season and not enough in the dry season. And that's where we need to rely upon Lake Okeechobee for fresh water during the times like right now during the dry season. So this reservoir is geared to help capture the basin flows as well as lake releases and help us try to meet the minimum flows and levels, and so we keep a healthy estuary out there. So
Jennifer,
to give you an idea how large this reservoir is, it's going to take nearly 2 months to fill the reservoir.
Wow.
With the pumps that are out there. So.
Jennifer, you presumably are going to stay on top of this feasibility study as it starts and moves forward.
Yes. I mean, we are very interested in this topic. It fits nicely with our new expansion into Glades and Hendry counties. That's where the reservoir is located, is in the freshwater Coosawhatchie Basin. So we're going to be actively engaged throughout the process. And I agree with everything that's been said. I mean, this reservoir is an incredibly important tool, a piece of a bigger puzzle to fixing our river and estuary. In that it will help store some fresh water and give it back to the river during the dry season when the river needs additional flow. And, of course, we want to make sure that that water is clean that will require potentially additional treatment, which is why we are open to all ideas. I think that's what the summit's all about, is trying to bring people together and really explore every idea and tool that's out there. And then we're going to continue to build on that, working very closely with the district and DEP to hand them that information that we gather at the summit so that they can utilize that in their feasibility study process.
Dr. Knight, are you going to be involved in the feasibility study as well? And do you kind of have any ideas as to what seems like it might be the best way to go forward since you have such a deep history in this?
Well, I plan to stay abreast of it. Whether or not I'm involved, I don't know if that's been determined yet, but I'll certainly be keeping track of it and help if I can.
But in terms of water quality that's being moved around, this is kind of the silver bullet that we're looking for, right? I mean, it would be great if we could take huge sums of water and make them clean in a relatively straightforward way, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah, I think the stormwater treatment areas that the district has done in the past are, I think, greater than 50,000 acres at this time, treating a massive amount of water, about 1 billion gallons a day. And that has been found to be a very cost-effective way of dealing with such large water volumes. But those were designed for phosphorus removal, and the nutrient of concern, of greatest concern in the Coosawhatchie, is nitrogen. And so the reason the district's been doing research in the last 3 years on additional research on wetlands is to perfect the design of those systems for nitrogen removal. And that research has come a long ways and I think is available to fit into this feasibility study that Phil's talking about.
All right. Phil, we're just about out of time, but can you just give us a real quick update on what's going on? There's another reservoir on the other coast, the C-44 on the St. Lucie River, right? It sort of mirrors this in some ways?
Yes, sir. It's a little bit smaller. That one, the federal government and the Corps of Engineers is actually building, and they'll be wrapping that up here, I think, within the next year. The district is building a stormwater treatment facility associated with it, and it's largely completed right now. And then there's plans for one south of the lake, the EAA Reservoir, which we're in the currently in the design phases of that. And then we have another large one that'll be constructed north of Lake Okeechobee that they're just wrapping up the federal evaluation of it, but it's located on the north side of Lake Okeechobee where the Kissimmee River comes in, and it's got a large large reservoir, some treatment, and some wetland restoration and associated with it. So things are coming together with the funding the legislature has been providing the last few years. We're starting to get some of these projects, bigger projects, moving along now. So.
All right. Well, we'll have to track the feasibility study as it moves forward on this show. We'd love to have you back or whoever from the district we need to talk to, but we'll make sure we do that moving forward.
We'd love to.
Jennifer Hecker, remind listeners how they can get involved on Wednesday.
So for those of you who'd like to join us via the web, please go to chnep.org, chnep.org, and you can sign up. There's a button right at the top to sign up for the webinar. You'll be given instructions on how you can participate via the web, and we do have question and answer and commenting through the web that will be streamed live into the room itself. So you really, truly can participate virtually, and we encourage people to do so.
All right. That is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guests. Jennifer Hecker is Executive Director of the newly renamed Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership, formerly the Charlotte Harbor National Estuary Program. Jennifer, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Phil Flood is a Regional Representative for the South Florida Water Management District. Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for allowing us to participate.
And Dr. Bob Knight is Principal Scientist at Wetland Solutions in Gainesville. Dr. Knight, we appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
When we return, WGCU's John Davis is joined by two researchers from the University of Central Florida to talk about their study on the genetics of endangered sea turtles, green sea turtles, that is, which are apparently having a banner nesting season. I'm Mike Knieri. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.